It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Kiss the Ground. It's the name of a book. It's the name of an upcoming documentary film. And the author, Josh Tickell, has been with us before, and he's back for this episode of Farm to Table Talk. Josh, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me, Roger.
You know, Josh, in the first episode that we talked, you explained how this came to be and some of the journey and then how you felt about what you've learned from this whole process. And hopefully, since we did that, there's been a few of my listeners who have chased down your book and read it or listened to it. So they may have some questions. And I think that one of the questions that I hear often is, okay, so how do we use all of this information? So if a consumer says, this all makes sense, I don't have much I can do to my yard, but if I want to support this movement and support this process that you're describing, what can I do as a consumer?
Well, that's a great question, because there are really three trajectories that we can affect change in this area. One is through farmers and ranchers changing their operations, changing practices. One is through government, which is perhaps the biggest impediment to this regenerative revolution. And the other is consumer power, the power of your dollar. We vote, most of us in the United States, we eat three times a day. That means we vote three times a day. It's a tremendous amount of power. If we look at the food sector in the United States, the only sector that is experiencing rapid and sustained long-term growth is organic and natural foods. Other than that, food in the U.S., as an industry, profitability has plateaued. But if we look at organics and we look at natural foods, we see that profitability continues to increase. Revenues continue to increase. Why is that? People are waking up to the fact that what you put in your body, the fuel you put in your body, affects your body. It affects your children's health, very much so. And we know that in the United States, per year, roughly 3 pounds of toxic chemicals per person per year are sprayed on our crop fields. That bioaccumulates. And we literally have thousands of peer-reviewed studies that now point to the bioaccumulative toxins, you know, 2,4-D, glyphosate, whatever you choose your poison, because there are so many of them. Thousands of studies that now point to these bioaccumulative toxins as massive health risks and contributive causes for cancer, melanoma, and so the list goes on. So what can you do as a consumer? First things first, support farmers and ranchers that do not excessively spray their crops and livestock. Mm-hmm. Organic is part of that, but it's not the whole solution. Rebecca, my wife, and I, my co-directing partner, we shop from many farmers and ranchers that are not certified organic, but we know them, and we know their practices. And the way we do that is we meet them. We meet them at the farmers market, or we meet them through the restaurants that serve their food, and we talk to them. And we say, what do you do? How do you do this? Oh, I see. You're not certified because once every 5 years you do spray. You do have to do a weed kill. I understand. But overall, 99% of your practices are amazing and your soil is getting better. So that consumer power creates not just a bond between the consumer and the producer, but it goes into stores. It spreads online. People now talk about these initiatives on Twitter. They talk about it on Facebook. They talk about it on Instagram. We have a food-loving culture where we love to take photos of food. Mm-hmm. That culture is slowly learning that it's not just the outside of the food that matters. It's the inside of the food. So consumers can participate not just in the food that they put on their table and that they feed their children, that being what we call regenerative, meaning it's regenerating, replenishing the soil, but they can participate in the conversation that supports the farmers and the ranchers that are doing that kind of work.
You know, I always think about the farmers market in Santa Monica, which is not far from you. Have you been to it?
Yes.
Isn't it great? You know, the thing that they literally fly a flag at the various tents as to whether or not they're certified organic or not. I mean, they're the only place I've ever seen that actually does that. But the other thing I really liked, I don't know if you saw it, but right in the center of the market, they post all of the production practices of every farmer that's in the market. And so it's like going to these old-fashioned library cards, and you can just thumb through them if you care to. And they put their whole story. I mean, you can get that when you go up and talk to them. But I just thought that was really, it's really, really interesting. They just actually put it right out there. I talked to many farmers that said, you know, I'm not certified organic. There's some things I don't do, and this is why I don't do them. And the people that I've talked to have never lost a customer if they were able to give a decent explanation.
Yeah, I've heard that many times. And you know, look, I get flack. People say, look, this is a white privilege thing that you're talking about. Only rich people can shop this way, who don't live in food deserts, who aren't trapped in inner cities. And, you know, that criticism has some truth to it. But, look, I've been in very small towns. I've been in parts of places where you wouldn't think farmers markets are happening. Bismarck, North Dakota has a thriving farmers market scene. You know, it's not just Santa Monica, California, and it's not just rich white people. You know, this is, as I illustrate in the Kiss the Ground book, there are ways of approaching food and diet that alter what you begin to count as food, regardless of your budget level. You know, Coca-Cola and Doritos are neither regenerative for the soil, nor are they regenerative for your body. So the more you get into this, the more you realize, wow, if I'm on a fixed budget, I can actually have a radical impact, not just on my own health, but on the health of the farms and ranches where my food is grown, just by choice.
You know, one thing, Josh, when people go to the store anymore, you don't see products that are labeled regenerative. You know, it's a mouthful that until a few years ago, most people weren't familiar with using that. And maybe it just goes to show that we weren't spending a lot of money on branding, because it's not that easy for people to relate to what that is. And again, I don't think you see it anywhere in stores that I can remember right now. But instead, you've got non-GMO, and you've got organic, and now you've got real organic, because there those people that don't believe that something grown in a greenhouse is the same, because it doesn't have soil, really. And so that's differentiating, too. So it is confusing. And I guess it's my way of saying that it's confusing, though, is coming back and seconding what you just said, and that is people just have to be curious and have to ask and look and read and do some research and understand where their food comes from, because it's not that simple that they can just go down and see what the labels are saying.
It's not. When you first get into this stuff, it can be overwhelming. It's easier to just buy what you've always bought, do what you've always done. But honestly, it takes very little time to clear up the confusion. It's, you know, we dedicate an entire guide in the back of the book, really simple, break it down, Kiss the Ground book, as to how you can reorient your practices around food. It's easy. Once you get into it, you'll know, oh, that label really means this, that label means that. This is just something with a green package. That actually doesn't mean anything. Does it take a couple extra minutes when you go shopping? It does. Do you feel better physically after a while? Yes. In fact, your whole family will probably feel better physically.
Well, and the other place we should mention quickly is the some progressive chefs across the country that are paying much more attention and have farm-to-table programs. And I don't know that you can go to any at least medium-sized city or larger in the United States and not find restaurants that are proudly identifying the farms that they're sourcing at least some of their menu from.
Yep, that's coming. We're seeing more and more farm to table. You know, these things have to become trends, and sometimes they have to start at the over the top restaurants, you know, the Obama's Dine, or, you know, sometimes that has to be the way it is in the beginning. But we're seeing totally cool, rootsy restaurants in places like East LA and, you know, Harlem, and just really a bunch of people getting this, no matter where they come from, in terms of the socioeconomic spectrum. You know, look, healthy food is better for our bodies. If it's healthy food that tastes great, that we can show where it came from, it creates a line of transparency, and we need transparency in food. We have a very opaque food system on purpose because people don't want you to see what's behind. You know, it's one thing to eat the sausages. It's another thing to visit the sausage factory.
Yeah.
But I encourage everybody to visit the sausage factory because that's where it's at. You know?
You know, if you look at your journey and you went all over the country, what are the messages that you hope farmers take away from this?
Well, for farmers specifically, you know, what we look at in the book and the movie, the audiobook, all of these things, is how do you create something that is resilient, meaning if, you know, commodity prices of corn fall or soy fall, that doesn't affect you. So is it resilient? How do you create that? How do you create something that has legacy, meaning can you hand it on in honestly better shape than you got it? So is it resilient? Can you create that? How do you create legacy? And then third, and perhaps maybe foremost for many farmers, how do you make something that is vastly more profitable than what you're doing now? So the nexus of profitability, resiliency, and something that's a legacy. And I think we need to first start with where we're at as a country when we look at the farm economy, which is, you know, a massive and bloated farm bill, which essentially keeps farmers farming in a debt scenario where through commodity prices, through the Commodity Credit Corporation, which essentially, you know, it's essentially a subsidy to create commodity crops. It keeps farmers on a cycle of having to get larger and larger and larger, which for many people means taking out more and more loans, and drive more and more inputs into the land, which means more chemicals, more sprays, more fertilizers with larger machinery. And the end result is less and less topsoil. So you can go to 9 out of 10 commercial operations in the United States. I would assert you could go to 95 out of 100, and you can measure topsoil loss year in, year out. That topsoil is where the money is. If you're losing topsoil, you're losing the farm. I don't care how big you get. You will never be able to outrun topsoil loss. That means you really don't have resiliency. You really don't have legacy. And at the end of the day, even if your operation is propped up by Commodity Credit Corporation price guarantees, you really don't have profitability. Because if you take those price guarantees away, you cannot make money. So the current system, I would assert, is chasing farmers off the land. What we want to do and what we outlined in the book and the people we interviewed and the systems that we looked at are not niche organic producers in California or Vermont. They are large-scale farms in the Midwest or in the middle of the country that produce commodity crops but that make money hand over fist and that are increasing soil year on year out. So if you can do that, you have a whole different system. So the message to farmers is you're not doing anything wrong. You're doing exactly what the system has set up to have you do. That the chances of you having something that you can honestly pass on, the chances of you having honest profitability without the government propping you up, or the chances of you being able to be honestly resilient without a payday check that you'll get when your crop gets wiped out by crop blight are almost zero today. I want to reverse those chances, and I want to see farmers have 100%, 100%, 100% in all three categories.
Wow, that is a strong challenge. And, you know, I'm just thinking as you said that, of all the farm meetings that I've been to across the country, and I've been in pretty much every state in the country, that I've been to one sort of meeting or another, it would be a brave person to stand up and say what you just said in many of those meetings.
Sure. brave or stupid. The line is very is very blurred.
You know, and the thing is that we have land-grant universities and the extension service that's been going since, Abraham Lincoln's days. And in almost every county in the country, land-grants are in every state. We have three of them in California that are land-grant universities that are working on agriculture. More and more, they're dependent on getting their research support from companies that are selling chemicals, seed corn, and so forth, because the research has been cut back. So I think it's hard to see where you get the feedback, too. I mean, because I'm just sitting here thinking as you talk, but I'm a farmer in central Illinois, and you make me kind of go look in the mirror and say, you know what? Josh is talking to me. I really do need to think about this. And if I can do something about the soil, I'm going to do something about, the climate change, or whether you look at weather patterns and so forth. But it's just doing the right thing. That's a bold step for somebody to go and first look themselves in the mirror, let alone go to the County Farm Bureau meeting and stand up and make that speech.
Well, it is. And I'm not here to say, look, what you're doing is bad, wrong, you shouldn't be doing it, blah, blah, blah. This is not my livelihood. It's easy for a third party to look through the lens of information, interviews, science, and say, hey, look, there's a different way to do this. All I'm saying is, what are the metrics by which you measure success? Because a lot of farmers will say, well, I measure success by bushels per acre. I say, great, that's one way to measure success. I don't measure success like that, because having traveled to not as many states as you have been to, Roger, but many states, and been on many farms, and talked to farmers, and talked to their sons and daughters, and talked to their wives, and I say, how many of you have to take off-farm jobs to support your farm?
Yeah.
Most of them do.
Yep.
I talk to their sons and daughters. How many of you are excited to inherit this operation? Very few. Very few. Very, very few. Even those who go to the land-grant universities, many of them will not take on the family farm, which is why America's farms are consolidating year in, year out. They're getting larger. They're being bought up. And so we see that consolidation stretching into the future, because the metric for success, that's the ultimate measurement of bushels per acre. The ultimate measurement is a farm that you can't pass on, because your children aren't excited about working till, you know, working themselves to the bone to lose money and to be in debt. That's the reality. And I guarantee you, Roger, I will get angry mail from this podcast. I will get at least one angry message from this podcast. I always do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's challenging when somebody says, are you measuring success in a way that you really want to measure success? Or have you been lulled into complacency by a system that actually doesn't care about you, that is just looking to maximize somebody else's profit? That is a very challenging question to have to look in the mirror and ask yourself. But having seen the plight of so many family farms, I'm an advocate for family farms. I'm an advocate for farmers. I'm an advocate for ranchers, both in the United States and abroad. And where I advocate is on a different measure of success. Not because I don't want them to succeed, because I do. I'm committed that they succeed. They're our livelihood. That's our sustainability.
Would you say that cover crops and minimum tillage are two of the most important things that they can look at?
Yes. So look, if we want to look at measures of success, in terms of increasing soil health, in terms of really having profitability, genuine profitability, in terms of resiliency, then we have to go back to the soil. We have to go back to the number one resource that every farming operation relies on worldwide since the dawn of time. It is the soil. And so when you look at the soil, you go, okay, if this is our number one resource, how do we minimize inputs? How do we maximize output, right? Very simple. You augment soil. You build soil. How do you build soil? We know how to build soil. Scientifically, very simple. You do not till it. the more you till soil, the more you release the valuable carbon, you break the fungal relationships in the soil. So if you can minimize tillage, if you can go no-till, that is a step in the right direction. Cover crops are a no-brainer. Do they cost money? Yes. It does cost money to plant alfalfa, whatever, during the winter, right?
Mm-hmm.
But can you recoup that money by grazing a herd in the spring on that cover crop? That's what we see regenerative farmers doing. What does that do? Well, the herd grazes the crop. They fertilize the soil. So now you're starting to build into a resilient system. You're growing more than just one thing. You're not just growing corn. You're growing corn and some kind of cover crop, and you're grazing cattle. You have three products in the place of one. And so these are the tools to accomplish the different metrics that we talk about, but the lens through which we look at how to accomplish those metrics, how to accomplish success in those categories, the lens is soil. Soil, 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 soil. Is your soil getting better or is it getting worse? Because whatever you can do to make that soil better, that's money in the bank.
You know, it reminds me, you almost need to have a crisis hotline for people that could anonymously call in and say, and help me. I want to go that way. I don't want to confess in public yet, but help me along. I guess in the absence of that sort of thing, they'll have to go to the websites and just decide that they should be looking at what they're doing. You know, the other key thing that you've touched on before is the policymakers. And there is something going on, probably again in every state, every country, that there's a Department of Agriculture equivalent or, you know, that is setting policy. Do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, you touched on it earlier saying that you feel that the large chunk of the farm policies that we have in the United States are counterproductive. I just want to give you an opportunity if you think that there's something else you can point out, because people might figure out what they want to ask on, you know, where they're buying their food and so forth. Is there anything that they should ask their elected representatives?
Absolutely. Look, I would say the first question is, what are we doing to support soil health? What measures are we putting in place to support soil health? And people feel very disempowered on a national level when we talk about the federal farm program or something like that. Fine. Let's not deal with that yet. Let's deal with local. And let's do it on a city, county, and state basis. What policies can we put in place at a local level to incentivize regenerative, I know it's a mouthful, just bear with me, to incentivize people to increase soil health? Because that will ultimately draw more money into communities. If farms are doing better, it will help, it'll help ground, literally, ground communities with a solid economic framework. And so I think we need to look at this more as a, you know, let's cap it at the state level and let's see how many states we can get to sign on to metrics that actually measure soil health and whether it's a tax break, what, you know, I know in one hand I criticize the commodity credit program for incentivizing monocrops that hurt the soil. On the other hand, I'm saying let's use government to incentivize helping the soil. Government and taxes and the methods used are a tool. I don't think we should not have any government intervention in the farm program. I think that we need to use that tool to accomplish success in the metrics that we discussed earlier. Real metrics that are long-term, that are going to help our cities, our states, our country, ultimately help our planet. That's where we need to use our policy. So yeah, I think that there's a lot that can be done policy-wise.
Let's take a shot at metrics. So if we looked, we get back together again. I don't know if 5 years is enough time or not. What sign of progress might we see 5 years from now that you can say, I feel good about that, and maybe even Kiss the Ground contributed to it? What might that be that you would feel we could feel good about 5 years from now?
One of the biggest measurements that we can make in terms of soil is soil organic matter and infiltration rates. Those are two things that are they're easily measured. Soil organic matter is about 50% carbon by weight, and it largely rests in the top inches of the soil. Infiltration rate is largely the amount of water that soil can absorb in a given amount of time. Most of the United States is at a very low soil organic matter right now. Its infiltration rates are a fraction of what they used to be. If we wanted to really measure this on a large scale, we would say, let's set a five-year goal. We want the average, you know, rangeland infiltration rate to be X, which has to be more than it is today. And we want soil organic matter in average rangelands to be this. We want the average land under plow to have an infiltration rate of this and a soil organic matter of that. It's not a perfect measurement. It doesn't perfectly say, okay, we've increased soil health, but it's a very clear indicator. It's a good guide that indicates that a lot of other things have to be working in the right direction. That we could use as national metrics, and literally 5 or 10 years from now, we could revolutionize what's happening in our soils, what's being grown, and what's being fed to our people.
That's great. I mean, you make progress where you can measure. And if you can get agreement on measuring this and getting metrics, I wonder if you can get the the farm organizations and get the councils and the boards and the others to sit down with the Extension Service and the land grant universities and the USDA and try to keep poking away and seeing if they can get them to work with us on setting those kind of targets.
Yeah, I think that is a future that is it's both doable and imperative.
You know what? I am so pleased that you've taken this time to talk to us. And I think that what you are doing with Kiss the Ground is fantastic. And I'm looking forward to the next stage when you end up having the movie out there and we can talk about that again and get people's reaction to it. But in the meantime, let me just ask you one more time where people look for the book, for more information on trying to join the movement. Where do you send them, Josh?
Kiss the Ground, the book, is available at all of your favorite bookstores. It's also online as an audiobook with Audible. And folks should go to the nonprofit website, kisstheground.com, sign up for the newsletter, get involved. Also, there's a great Facebook presence for the nonprofit. A lot of conversations online, constantly swirling, answering questions. And from there, you can find all of the characters in the book and all of their various books and their nonprofits and entities as well.
Josh DeKell, I want to thank you for being on Farm to Table Talk. You not only are an author and a documentary filmmaker, but you are the best spokesperson that I've come across, I think, for regenerative agriculture. And so keep up the good work.
Well, thank you, Roger. Wonderful speaking with you, and my thanks to your listeners as well.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.